discussion on Senate Bill 5521, the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And this is a bill that members will recall we sent out of committee. It was found in mathematical error that there's an amount that was billed twice to cover the other fund's expenditure limitation for the Wage Security Fund. What this amendment by LFO identified as 5521-A2, dated 6-7-99, would, on page 1 of the printed and gross bill, line 7, delete $4,101,956 and insert $3,746,131. This is to correct a technical error in the budget. Representative Package.
Chair, I realize technical error. I move the dash A2 amendment to Senate Bill 5521.
Okay, Representative Package moves that we adopt the LFO amendments identified as A2, dated 6-7-99 to Senate Bill 5521. Is there further discussion?
And it's, Mr. Chairman, changes from $4,101,956.
To $3,700,000.
$4,601,000.
Yes. Okay, Representative Patrick? Okay. Is there objection? If not, it's so approved. Representative Patrick?
Mr. Chair, I can move Senate Bill 5521 as amended this morning to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Packers now moves Senate Bill 5521 as amended out to the full Wage Needs Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Yee?
Aye.
Duke?
Aye.
Butler?
Aye.
Catherine?
Aye.
Star?
Aye.
Cannon?
Aye. The motion carries. And we'll use the same carriers.
Yes, that's Senator Q-Tub in full and in the Senate, and Representative Patrick on the floor.
Okay. We'll close the hearing on our work session on House Bill 5521. Open the public hearing on 5015. And we apologize to our members of the audience who came here, and we had to take care of some housekeeping business first. Mr. Scott, would you like to come back up, please? Would you like to present your presenters this morning? Now, there was one person that was left over. And if we take them first, would that be permissible?
That would be great.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bill Scott, the Director of the Economic Development Department. We're essentially going to try to cover four things today. The first is to finish up on the Oregon Downtown Development Association, which is part of the community assistance piece of Community Development Fund. And then we'll go to the Film and Video Office. Then we'll come back and try to finish up the rest of the Community Development Fund, except for Mike Thorne's testimony on the Columbia Channel deepening, which we are planning for first thing tomorrow, if that
okay.
Works. So I would begin by inviting up Stacey Graham, who's a city counselor from state and a board member or board chair of the Oregon Downtown.
Before we take Stacey, could I take up yesterday's leftover person?
Oh, I'm sorry. Stacey was a leftover person, but there's another one.
Okay,
going. That's great.
David Vanderleft.
Good, sure.
David Vanderleft.
Thank you. My name is David Vanderleft. I'm from Brownsville, Oregon. I work for a number of cities and counties, helping them to apply for and manage community development block grants, you know, throughout the state, but primarily in the valley. And I'd like to pass out my testimony.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and take it.
we really are on a very tight time frame, so I would encourage you to, I'm not trying to shut you off, but there's a whole bunch of people.
About 4 minutes.
All right, fine.
I'd like to begin by just telling you a very short story about a lady that's named Sally. Now, Sally is 83 years old. She lives in a city of 1,480 population in eastern Oregon. And she receives an income of $720 a month from Social Security. Sally has chickens in her yard and other pets, some cats and a dog. Her neighbors check in on her every now and then to see if she's okay and help her with shopping, take her to the doctor and such. She had a lot of problems with the house when she applied for a local housing rehabilitation program from the city of Hefner. Unsafe wiring, bad plumbing, dry rot, inadequate weatherization. Since she owned her house free and clear, she easily qualified for a no-interest deferred payment loan to fix up her house. She's valued at $27,420. Now she has a decent, safe home to live in. It's nothing fancy, but it's hers. She can stay there and spend her remaining years in her community with a little help from a friend. If she has to move because she can't afford to maintain the home, she'll need to move far away to an affordable housing project in the Dalles or Pendleton. Her chickens, cats, and dogs won't go with her. The state will have to provide the supporting services that were once provided for free by her neighbors. How do you think Sally will do in her new home? There are thousands of Sallys in rural Oregon. With a hand, not a handout, they can continue to live in their homes, in their communities, with their friends, neighbors, and pets. OEDD is proposing to cut the Community Development Block Grant rehabilitation funding by 60%. There has been no reason or analysis of housing rehabilitation needs to justify this funding reduction. These cuts, if approved, will provide enough money to rehabilitate 80 houses in the entire state. The effects of these cuts will be felt mostly in rural areas by the elderly, the handicapped, and those with limited education and skills, in short, by those who cannot change their economic situation. Over the past 4 years, the state of Oregon has built an average of 1,220 new affordable housing units per year at an average cost of nearly $70,000 per unit and an average public subsidy of $19,441 per unit. More than six times as many units could be rehabilitated for the same cost to the taxpayers. The average cost for rehabilitation in Sweet Home Lebanon, for example, is less than $3,000 per unit. So clearly, preserving and not building is the most cost-effective way for Oregon to meet its affordable housing needs. Cities, counties, and housing providers agree. In a survey conducted by the Oregon Economic Development Department as part of its own citizen participation process for the CDBG funds, the message was loud and clear that housing rehabilitation programs should be a priority for community development block grant funding. In addition to the proposed funding cuts, OEDD has proposed a first-come, first-served application system with new state-mandated barriers and red tape that make it difficult and in many cases impossible for cities and counties to apply for CDBG housing rehabilitation. Under the proposed guidelines, cities and counties must be invited to apply. Before, all cities and counties could apply without invitation from the state. The new proposed rules require cities and counties to enter into some kind of partnership with a nonprofit organization to operate the rehabilitation programs. Some areas of the state do not even have such an organization in their areas, or the local nonprofit does not have the experience and the capacity to carry out the program. Private organizations who can deliver housing rehabilitation programs to cities and counties in these areas would not be allowed to provide these needed services under the new proposed rules, thereby eliminating any possibility for these cities and counties to apply for and receive housing rehabilitation funds. They are also proposing to require that at least two other cities or counties in the applicant's region transfer their entire existing community development block grant funded loan portfolio to a regional housing fund managed by the nonprofit participant that may not even exist. These new application requirements are contradicted by Oregon Economic Development Department's own survey. In that survey, cities and counties and others overwhelmingly rejected the new proposed first-come, first-served application process. They overwhelmingly supported the competitive system that has been used in the past. They overwhelmingly supported a grant system that would assure that all cities and counties would have a reasonable chance to apply for and receive funding. These survey results are not disseminated to the public, and I obtained this information just last Friday after requesting it from OEDD. Proposed rules have been delayed for more than 7 months, and there will be a comparable delay in awarding grants. It is unfortunate that the distribution of $15 million of cumulative block grant funds has been delayed for so long so that OEDD could redesign the cumulative block grant program in a way that cities and counties never wanted in the first place. No problems are being solved while the funding is delayed, and I hope that this committee will listen to the message from the cities and counties and make housing rehabilitation a priority and leave the application system alone. I have attached, for your information, copies of the survey, a printout of the survey results, and a number of letters from cities and one county supporting generally the statements that I've made. Thank you. If you have any questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions? Send me eight.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vanderlip, what is the department's response to their rules that the funding be cut by 50% when obviously it's much more cost effective to help preserve housing for the senior and disabled citizens? I think you said that for housing rehabilitation it costs about $3,000 per unit, and when it's built in the city for new apartments, it costs $19,441 per unit. And then the quality of life is so much better if they can remain in their own homes. So what is the department's reason for cutting the funding by 60%?
So what they have said in proposed in their proposed rules essentially is that they want to set up these regional revolving loan funds in the state, and they think that there's only going to be a few cities and counties that will be able to meet these new guidelines and file applications.
Okay. Thank you very much. Casey Graham, I apologize to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Stacey Graham. I am I serve on the Oregon Downtown Development Association Board. I'm also City Council President for the City of Staten, and I am also the Main Street Chair in Staten, and that's why I'm here today to speak to you. Earlier yesterday explained a little bit about the Oregon Downtown Development Association and their community assistance work. I'm here to kind of paint the picture and tell you a little bit about what that assistance means to communities like mine. As you know, a lot of the cities in the state of Oregon have not been receiving increases annually in what we're taking in from tax dollars, and that makes assistance from groups like ODA much more important to us. We've been working with the group for about 3 years, and I want to talk to you a little bit about what they have done for us in providing us technical assistance in helping build our capacity in our community to garner funding, to develop design standards, and to really revitalize our downtown. In the last 2 years in the downtown Staten and sublimity areas, we've had $2 million of investment, and that's new investment, and that investment has created 29 new jobs, not replacing any jobs, but just new jobs. And a lot of it comes from the assistance that we've gotten in looking outside for dollars to spur development and to identify ways to recruit business for coming in to our community. This is a downtown that has seen no new development in the last 10 years to speak of. There may be something here, something there, but nothing really very significant. On last Friday, I went to the grand opening of the new Performing Arts Center, which sounds pretty grand and glorious. I have to tell you, in a town of 6,000 people, it's not a very big Performing Arts Center. But it was a wonderful event with hundreds of people attending, and we had musicians and all kinds of people from all around the valley who came. I just want to go through very quickly for you the list of investment that we've had in the downtown in the past 2 years. We have a new restaurant in a renovated home that was Mrs. Staten's home, one of the daughters of the founder of the community. A new Victorian home and office space has really spurred a lot of interest. It's a gift store as well, a health food store, a massage center, an antique store, a karate studio. We renovated a tavern and turned it into a family resource center, which I thought there was a little bit of irony there, and we were kind of happy about that. Our phone company is expanding by leaps and bounds all over the up the canyon and in the valley, and they are building a new headquarters building. We have a new family restaurant, a music store, the Performing Arts Center, two professional offices, and a bakery and restaurant. Those are all new businesses in our community downtown, and that has been a pretty significant change. ODA helped us work on, actually linked us to two grants, one a Rural Investment Fund grant and one through OEDD, totaling $35,000. We are leveraging those dollars at about 8-to-1. We've generated more than $240,000 in in-kind contributions, in cash contributions from the community and in local volunteer groups and individuals and companies giving us support. They've helped us in the development of an urban renewal plan and in developing design standards. We've also, with support from them, developed something called the Business Assistance Team, where we have professionals in our community who work with new businesses and struggling businesses to get them back on their feet or help them in areas where they don't have any expertise. They've linked us to new grant opportunities and even helped in a partnership between the City of Sublimity and Marion County for downtown streetscapes. In seeking and receiving a $200,000 federal grant. So the community assistance program is really a boon to small communities like mine, and even in a community where we have such great access to Salem and experts over here, it really makes a huge difference. There are a couple of other examples that I want to use. In the City of Condon, they needed a grant application for streetscapes and downtown improvements. It just so happened that Vicki was over about an hour away from Condon the day she picked up her phone messages and got the call, ran over there, spent about 6 hours helping them put the grant together because they'd never done a grant before, and got it off, and they got the money. In Brookings, OEO worked through a downtown resource team and helped the community in redeveloping their downtown center within a proposed one-way couplet. They sent a resource team that included a landscape architect, business clustering specialist, and organizational specialist to help address the immediate and future needs of downtown. And it's these kinds of collaborative projects that ODA is able to pull people together and really help a community who doesn't have those resources. So I would encourage you to continue to support the community assistance.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Roger Lee. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Scott. You have a different plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, what we would like to do is get the film and video group, which originally was scheduled to start today, through, and then we'll take Mr. Lee and your immediate opportunity
okay.
to fund.
So, Mr. Wilson and his...
Yeah, what I'd like to do is just, I'll briefly overview that the film and video office is responsible for marketing Oregon as a location for productions and also for developing the industry within the state, and that they've done extremely well in a very competitive environment, competing with the 260 film and video commissions around the world. I would like to introduce, I think, Dave Hudson, who is the chair of the Oregon Film and Video Board of Directors, and he will introduce the other presenters.
Okay, so Dave, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
I'll just distribute some materials for you.
Okay.
This
the video presentation.
Movie center.
Everyone can give a statement.
That's not true.
Okay, if you'd like to begin, sir.
Great. Mr. Chairman, good morning, and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Dave Hudson. I serve as the chairman of the Oregon Film and Video Board of Directors for the Oregon Film and Video Office. My occupation in the private sector is that I'm the founder and president of Coldstream Capital Management, which is a financial management investment firm in Portland. I'd like to give the committee first an overview of the operation and accomplishments of the Film and Video Office during the 1997-99 biennium. Joining me today in this overview is David Wolfson, Executive Director of the Oregon Film and Video Office, and Veronica Reinert right here, who serves as the Assistant Director of the Office. Additionally, today we'll be joined by representatives of the film and video industry from here in Oregon. The Oregon Film and Video Office is a semi-independent state agency created by the Oregon Legislature during the 1995 session. Previously, it was a division of the Oregon Economic Development Division, Department. The office is under the administrative control and supervision of a 5-member board of directors appointed by the governor. By statute, the board of directors is comprised of 2 people from the film and television production industry, 2 people from the financial industry, and 1 person from the emerging multimedia and digital industry. I serve as chair of the board of directors as elected by the board and also serve in the capacity as one of the required members of the board from the financial community. The mission of the Oregon Film and Video Office is to promote the rapid statewide development of the film, video, and multimedia industry in Oregon and to enhance the industry's revenues, profile, and reputation within the industry and among the industry international. The committee has been provided a copy of the document entitled Industry Briefing and Strategic Plan 1997 to 2000, which is this one, which I think is in your book. And this document outlines the strategy for growing this industry into the next millennium. The governor's recommended budget for the office for the 1999 to 2001 biennium is $950,387. This request appears as a line item in the Economic Development Department's budget request. I'd like now to have David Wolfson, the Executive Director of the Film and Video Office, to give you a more detailed overview of the operation, budget, and the accomplishments of the office over the 1997-1999 biennium. But before I do that, I regret to have to inform you, and I'd like to advise the committee that we will soon be losing David on the 1st of July. He will be returning to the private sector. David has done an absolutely terrific job in this role in leading the office and the industry over the last eight and a half years. The board of directors has initiated a transition and recruitment plan last week to quickly fill this position of executive director. Veronica Reinhard will be named the interim director of the office until a new permanent executive director comes on board. Veronica has been with the office since 1991 and brings a seasoned experience to this role. She was named assistant director of the office in 1996, and the board has full confidence in Veronica in her role as the interim director. So I'd like now to introduce David.
David, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is David Wolfson. I serve as executive director of the Oregon Film and Video Office. This is a position I have held since 1991. As David mentioned, I will be leaving in July to take a position in the private sector. I can assure this committee that I will help with a smooth and effective and prompt transition of my position with the office. I would like to give the committee an overview briefing of the Oregon Film Video's office operation, budget, and accomplishments over this last 2 years. The Oregon Film and Video Office has a full-time staff of 4 people and 1 part-time position. I serve as executive director of the office and am responsible for the overall management of the office, as well as business recruitment, marketing, and strategic planning. There are 2 project managers who are responsible for providing location and permitting information to production companies and assisting producers through the production. Veronica Reinert, who joins us here at the table, serves as a project manager as well as assistant director of the office. I know that the committee's time is short, and I want to make sure that our private sector partners have a chance, but if time allows, I'll have Veronica give you an overview of the kind of recruitment process and how that works at the end of testimony if we have time. We also have one person who serves as an administrative and marketing manager who is also responsible for office operations and development and execution of marketing, our marketing efforts. The office receives over 15,000 phone calls a year seeking assistance or information. These calls range from film and television production companies that are considering coming to Oregon with their productions, Oregon-based businesses needing various information or technical assistance, as well as the media and general public that use the office as an information resource. One of the things I want to discuss is the perception versus reality of our business. The film and television industry is a very tough, sophisticated, global, finance-driven business. It's a business of high risk and high reward. Prior to joining the office in 1991, I worked in Los Angeles as an entertainment lawyer and executive with Paramount Pictures, Orion Pictures, and Dick Clark Productions. I think Dick is a good example of the perception versus reality. He is as driven as when he was 25 years old. I can assure the committee he is not 25 years old. And he is tough, smart, and extremely aggressive in business and in the negotiations we would conduct when I was worked with him. The Oregon Film Video Office fiercely competes with 260 film commissions worldwide. It is extremely fast-moving process and dynamic. The competition has never been tougher in my 8 years in the job, especially from Canada, given significant governmental incentives that exist, as well as the historically low exchange rate of the Canadian dollar against the U.S. dollar. Despite these pressures, I am pleased to report we have competed successfully this biennium. One of the main accomplishments this biennium has been to successfully put Oregon back in the television movie business. This segment of the industry has been leaving the U.S. primarily to Canada to take advantage of a series of government-sponsored incentives, as well as an exchange rate of approximately 60 cents to the U.S. dollar. With a concentrated effort by the Oregon industry, labor unions, and our office, we have once again made Oregon attractive to Hollywood television movie producers. Since September 1997, when the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees Union instituted an innovative labor agreement, we have completed 7 television movies in Oregon. These films are important since they hire over 90% local cast and crew for their productions. You will hear from Charlie Carlson, business agent, in a few minutes. Presently, we're in preparation of 2 additional films that we recruited that will shoot in Oregon. The film Navy Divers, a feature film with 20th Century Fox that will star Robert De Niro. The producers of the film have stated that they expect to spend about $8 million while they're in Oregon during production. Additionally, Hearst Entertainment will begin production for the film Holly Ridge for Lifetime Television on cable, which will begin shooting in July, beginning perhaps in the next couple of weeks. In addition to theatrical and television movies, we've also been very active in television commercial work, especially car commercials. I also want to highlight for the committee the Oregon-based business. It's important to note that the Oregon film and television industry is more than Hollywood coming to our state. There's a permanently based film and television industry here that's 52 weeks a year. This includes film and television production companies, commercial and documentary producers, animation, and a rapid growing area of digital multimedia. This segment of the industry is expected to have revenues in excess of $100 million this year. This figure has grown since from $42 million in 1989. Our office works closely with the industry in this area, as well as assisting companies with locations, permitting, regulatory issues, and providing technical assistance and contact information. I'd like to also focus the committee on job creation and workforce.
Yes, excuse me. How much more of your testimony? We have a couple colleagues I need to take care of because they're on a short time frame.
I think if I can finish briefly, it will give a groundwork for their testimony.
Okay. All right.
If they have 1 minute, or we can let them go.
Well, they're from Hollywood, and they need to get it.
Senator Bryant and Senator Barr.
Is this the Jeff show or? Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. I'm Neil Bryant, a state senator from District 27, which is Central Oregon, and I'm here to support the request of the Oregon Film and Video Office. In my 6 years as a senator, I've had two occasions where Central Oregon, the state of Oregon, directly benefited from this particular office. And one was The Postman, which 2 years ago was filmed in Central Oregon, had a budget of $80 million. I don't think they made that much money on there after their release, unless they did it on the foreign side. But Kevin Costner and his production crew came to Central Oregon for a number of months, and it was a wonderful experience. They spent about $6 million locally, and they hired every horse and rider in the area for a number of weeks. And incidentally, the riders got paid $89 a day, and their horses were paid $109. And it was just a wonderful experience for those involved in the rest of the community. Little things happen. For instance, it was a cold April when they tried to film initially, and they didn't have proper clothing, so they came in to Ben and bought every fleece material available. They rented everything just about that was there. They were courteous and kind. Their food is catered through a group out of Hollywood, California, and it's just a wonderful menu they produce. But they bought their produce and their meat and all that, again, locally. So caused no problems in the community, and for a period of 60 to 90 days really injected some money in the economy. Then in 1995, they decided they were going to film a television series in Canada or in Central Oregon, and by coming up with a little money, it was $200,000, they filmed it in Central Oregon. It was called McKenna. It also failed after, I think, 26 weeks. It was about a Chief County Sheriff, basically, and his family, and they ran a dude ranch hiking operation. And, again, wonderful people. They brought their production crew, hired a lot of extras, and were in the area for about 26 to 28 weeks, and probably spent about $5 million during that time for our $200,000 investment. So that's a good turnaround. It's a wonderful opportunity for all kinds of people who get hired as extras and who just like to hang around and see what's going on. And the people are polite and courteous. And for the type of investment we make, we get a very good return. It's better than the federal match that we get from the Defense Department of 10 to 1.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comments. Senator Beyer.
Thank you. I'm Lee Beyer, Senator from District 21, which is Lane County, and I'm here to support the Film and Video's budget request. It's one of those rare opportunities, I think, when you folks who make the expenditure decisions are in a situation where you actually have the opportunity to make money for the state. I think there's a study that I was looking at that the Lyman University recently done, and it showed for the $900,000 investment that the state had made in the film office, the return on that was $8 million in increased income taxes to the state of Oregon on the total dollars revenue coming into the state of over $65 million. So it's not too often you get that kind of ROI, and certainly in our business in the legislature, we don't get that kind of opportunity very much. So I think this is an opportunity you can look at as a revenue generator rather than the others. Besides my duties as state senator, when I'm not here, I also serve as the executive director of the Economic Development Corporation for Lane County, and have had the opportunity wearing that hat to work with David and his staff on a number of opportunities in Lane County and the Central Oregon Central Valley area. Neil, one of the things that I've learned from that is that if you're going to deal in this business, then it's a good business for the state of Oregon, because it's like our other natural resource businesses. We get people coming in, and it doesn't take anything out of the state. It just brings money in. You've got to have a dedicated office and dedicated staff who, frankly, have the connections and make the connections with the industry, or you're not going to see that activity happen. And I think we have that currently in the office, and the competition is pretty heavy out there. I was involved in trying to recruit a television show, which is McKenna. And unfortunately, we lost that one. But that's something that's a big deal to Lane County. The Chambers Corporation in Lane County has invested in producing sound stages and a production facility that they've used there and would like to use a lot more, and it's a real asset to the state and certainly to the Central Valley area. But I don't think that they will be successful or the state will be successful unless we invest in the film office as we have in the past. I would also like to make a pitch. I know they have an option paper out on an Oregon Production Investment Fund. That's something in the current proposal or the current environment in this industry that is really needed. And I think it's something that it seems like an outflow of money, but I think in the end it will generate additional money for the state to be competitive. If you look at the competitive environment that's out there with Canada and with some of the East Coast facilities now, it's a tough business, but it's one that can be very positive for Oregon. An indication of the support, there was a conference in Eugene a few weeks ago, film and industry people, and at that conference there over 250 people that attended that were professionals in the business. It kind of gives you a sense of who's there. It's amazing to me in our community, and I know that there are a number down in the Ashland area where the chair is from, the number of people who work in this industry and make their home in Oregon. And I think one of the things that's important to keep in mind is these are all fairly high-income individuals, and frankly, they pay their income taxes in Oregon. So it's a good cash business. It's not always visible. And it's larger than the film business that often I think we think about as outsiders and talk about that. In our area, we've done a lot of business in the industrial film production work and is also in the commercial business. And again, that's a bigger business in the film. It's not any better any less than film, but it's a broad industry and it's one in our economic development arena that's very good for Oregon. It pays high wages and provides some good jobs throughout the state, not just in the urban areas. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you both very much. Cindy Yee.
Well, I was Senator from Hollywood. how often do you see movie industry coming to your district?
Oh, I think they look frequently, probably once every 2 to 3 years, other movies that I remember being shot there in my 26 years of in Central Oregon, the one with Katharine Hepburn and John Wayne, Rooster Cogburn. There was a series of Disney movies that were filmed there, The Apple Dumpling Gang and some others. Other television series, there was one with Clint Walker, where he was a sheriff in Alaska, and they chose Central Oregon. They come and look frequently, and they like Central Oregon, and it has a lot of people that can ride horses and will be extras and enjoy the experience. But normally, it comes down to a money thing with them, and our chief competition, surprisingly, seems to be Canada, just because of the valuation of the Canadian dollar and some other incentives they offer there. We do quite a few commercials in Central Oregon. I think it's primarily because of the sun and the mountains, so that you see those happening from time to time. People from Hollywood seem to vacation there, and then they'll kick some tires and look around a little bit. So I think it could do better than it has, but we have a very small office in film. And I think David does a good job with what he has.
Okay, thank you.
I was going to, in answer to Senator Yee's question, Mr. Chair, we did one feature film in Lane County last year. I think part of another one, a number of made-for-TV movies. And most of the work, I think, in Lane County has centered around, I call them industrial films. I'm not sure if that's technically correct, and commercials. A lot of commercials based out of there. A lot of the work will be based in Eugene and will go out into Roseburg or over to the coast or up in McKenzie.
That's your question. Which one of you were the midget in Austin Powers?
I was Kevin Costner's dog.
Oh, I see.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Wilson, welcome back. And I ask you to, in the sake of brevity, just kind of move us along because we have quite an area to cover this morning.
Thank you, Senator. They make it a tough act to follow after that. But very quickly, I would like the committee to hear from the private sector who have traveled and taken time off work to be here. So I'll complete my testimony shortly. There's a full written testimony in the packet.
Okay.
But as I was trying to say, the job creation and workforce development is a very important issue for us. And we're very keen interested in promoting the growth of high-quality jobs and opportunities for Oregonians. We do this in a number of ways. Through the types of production that we recruit, as we mentioned earlier, television, movies is a focus of ours because of the local employment it generates. We also, one of the things I wanted to mention to the committee that we passed out is that we promote Oregon-based businesses and individuals by purchasing and, distributing directories with individuals in every recruitment packet that we send. We also have our website linked to online versions of these so that we can be promoting Oregon-based crews and vendors 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the committee has been provided with a set of these directories and its materials. We also maintain a job hotline number for people interested in being on crews. We've also held a number of, and co-sponsored a number of, workforce development and educational programs with the industry. We work on regulatory issues and work with a number of other federal, state, local agencies in promoting positive film policies that also promote protection of the resource. We also partner with local communities throughout Oregon with our local liaison program, which is in partnership with local commission visitors bureaus and chambers of commerce throughout the state. Marketing efforts is part of what we do, and we do that through a variety of ways with our budget in terms of advertising, direct mail, trade shows, website, as I mentioned, as well as prospecting, direct sales to Hollywood when we learn of productions that are coming up, as well as in-person sales calls. The budget overview very quickly is for the 97-99 biennium is currently $924,501. We have a lottery shortfall in our budget of approximately $5,100. Our total operational budget then is $919,393 for this biennium. The governor's recommended budget for the 99-01 biennium is for it to be maintained at its current service level with a small inflation factor, resulting in a $950,387 budget request. Our budget breaks down roughly as follows. Personnel and related payroll expenses, $520,000. Marketing and advertising related expenses, $170,000. Office expenses, including telecommunication, travel, rent, and professional services, $230,000. We meet quarterly with an outside CPA to review our accounts. Last year, we received the State Controller's Gold Star Certificate for achieving statewide accounting goals and for excellence in financial reporting. Very quickly on return on investment, that we estimate the total direct revenue from out-of-state production of this biennium will total approximately $65 million. These revenue totals come from data provided directly from the various production companies. Willamette University conducted an economic impact study for our office, which established a multiplier effect of about 2.8 or $2.80 for each dollar that is spent in Oregon. As a result, the total economic impact from out-of-state productions, just out-of-state, is for the 97-99 biennium is approximately $182 million. Our office budget is for this period is $920,000. As a result, the return on investment to Oregon's overall economy is approximately $197 to every dollar invested in the Oregon Film and Video Office. In conclusion, the Oregon Film and Video Office is a cost-effective investment of public dollars. Our office directly leads to employment of Oregonians and dollars into our economy. The effects are felt throughout the local economy, touching many local businesses and individuals. Additionally, having Oregon on the silver screen or the television is great re-promotion for the state. This can lead to additional tourism, business relocation, as well as future film and television production. On a personal note, it's with a bit of mixed emotion that I leave my position as executive director. I thoroughly enjoy my time in public service and quite proud of what we've been able to accomplish since 1981. It's been an honor for me to serve as Oregon's representative in the film and television industry. I would like to thank my board and staff for their hard work and dedication, the industry for being a great partner, Bill Scott and the Economic Development Department, as well as this committee and as many members I've enjoyed working with over the last number of years. And with that, I will turn it back to Dave.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Senator Yee, to answer your question precisely on the number of films, if you look in your blue packet, there's a list of all the films, feature films that have been done here from 1915 on, so that gives you an idea of how often somebody does. If you come into the recent years, you can see the increase in the number of films.
Another question?
Yeah.
thank you very much for your presentation, and we are sorry to hear that you're going to leave. My question is, on the biennial report, it shows that page 32, it shows that for every dollar invested, you get $65 in direct revenue in return. But in Mr. Scott's June 11th memo, it shows
your return on investment is $182 for every dollar invested. Can you tell me which one is correct?
There is a memo in your packet that explains the analysis for the return on investment. And the original memo, the original document with the annual report, biannual report of that, is that the economic impact applies to the complete multiplied effect of the money coming in. I used only direct dollars. That's why it's a lower amount. It was in error. There is a corrected memo in your packet that will explain that the $65 million of revenue, direct dollars that come in, has a total of 2.8 times that amount in direct, in multiplied economic impact. So the short answer to your question is that the memo that you have in your packet is a correct summary of that based on the Willamette numbers. The document that was the biennial report failed to use the calculation of the total economic impact, only direct dollars, that's why it's a lower number, which is inaccurate according to.
So which one is correct?
The correct numbers are in your packet, which gives the latest data. You'll see a one-page memo in your packet.
I mean, is it $182 or is it $65?
The total. You may want to refer in the packet. You'll see a June 7 memo from me to the committee. And it is, again, the direct dollars is $65 million. There's a multiplier effect of $2.80 for every dollar that is spent. The total economic impact as a result for the biennium is $182
million. So the answer is $65 million direct, $182 with the multiplier.
Total economic impact.
$1,265, or is it $1 invested, you get $182 back?
It's actually more than that. I corrected. The correct memo is in front of you. It's $197.
I'm interested in the methodology you use in getting a return in investment. For every dollar we invest, what is the return for the money we invest? What is your methodology in determining your figure? Seems to me one place is 65, one place is 182, and the other place you say is 197.
Sandra, if I might offer, would you be willing to meet with Mr. Wilson and try to work out some of these things? I think the rest of the committee certainly would be interested in looking at what the actual rate of return is. But if you could meet with Senator Yee or her staff and come up with a little bit better idea so we're not looking at Schedule A, B, C, we're looking at one schedule and this is the estimated cost, I think that would be helpful. Would you accept that, Senator?
Yes, I'm interested in understanding what methodology you use to come up with these three answers. And I would appreciate if Robin can join us. So,
well, she has some other commitments, and if it's within her schedule to do so, she will participate.
Yes, because I think this is important.
Might I suggest that you make available to Senator Yee a copy of the Willamette study, and if it's like most studies that I've seen, the methodology will be laid out in the study.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, is that the methodology was established with Willamette University. The memo that I gave to you June 7 is an accurate, updated analysis of that. And I'd be happy to answer any questions as well as make. This was done in conjunction with Russ Beaton with the Economics Department with Willamette University, who's with us today. Again, understand that the biennial study in terms of the discrepancy, just so that you're clear, is that that was written some months back. And again, I failed in that document to use, as it was corrected by Willamette University, to use the multiplied money, if you will, as opposed to instead of the direct expenditures is the reason for the discrepancy. The two numbers, the recent Bill Scott memo, was simply a calculation error on my part, which I apologize for. So the memo that you have in your packet is a correct statement of the methodology of our economic impact.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I think we need to have accurate information.
Okay.
So we know which program we should invest our money. And to have three answers not acceptable.
Okay.
Call my office. Set up.
Sure. Thank you very much. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I assume then that the Willamette University study will generate the multiplier effect for the input-output study of 2.8.
That's correct, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other comments?
I'd like to invite some industry partners here to share their perspective from the private sector, if you don't mind. I'd like to introduce here, we have Mike Gattenbein, who's the president of Gatton Beat Productions in Medford. Mike also serves as the president of the Southern Oregon Film and Video Association. We also have today Charlie Carlson, who's the business agent for the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees Local number 488. And we have Ron Mitchell, a film and television producer now based in Oregon. Ron has extensive credits in television series, television movies, as well as feature films.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Do you want to come up?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Mike Gattenbein. I live in Medford, Oregon, and I am president of Ganton Beat Productions, my own little company, and also president of the Southern Oregon Film and Video Association. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of the Oregon Film and Video Office budget. Just real quickly, Ganton Beat Productions is a multimedia production company. I help produce elements for other businesses in the area to use for their productions, be it commercial or other types of products. And the Southern Oregon Film and Video Association is a localized trade organization. It's committed to the growth of the film, video, and new media industries in our region. Our membership ranges from Roseburg to California border and Klamath Falls to the coast, so we really cover a multi-county area. And we include people from all aspects of the industry, from students to seasoned Hollywood professionals. Our basic Southern Oregon Film and Video Association mission is to promote the industry in our region to the benefit of both our businesses and the community at large. I'm here to strongly encourage your support for the Oregon Film and Video budget. We enjoy a strong relationship between the Film Office and the Southern Oregon Film and Video Association. The Film Office is an important resource and partner in our efforts to grow the film and television industry in Southern Oregon. The Film Office helps market our region for film and television productions. They serve as a critical link between Oregon and Hollywood. The Film Office has assisted us on a variety of regulatory and permitting issues related to film production. They have been an important resource and partner in educational conferences to better inform our members on the many complex aspects of the film and television industry. The Film Office also serves as an important resource to our industry regarding film locations, permitting, regulatory issues, problem resolution, and technical assistance to our Oregon-based industry. The Oregon Film and Video Office is a tremendous investment of public dollars for the return it brings to the state. It's a very important investment for you to make for both the Southern Oregon Film and Video Association as well as the rest of Oregon. I would also like to take a moment to briefly comment on another item that may come before this committee. There are some industry members in Southern Oregon who believe that there is a need for a separate film office in our area. As a member of the local industry, I have spent quite a bit of time and effort studying this issue and have come to a personal conclusion that a single well-funded state film office is a much better approach at this point in time. I also believe that having a unified marketing and recruiting strategy through the Oregon Film and Video Office is a much more effective approach rather than having separate offices. In conclusion, the Oregon Film and Video Office is a great investment for this committee to make. We rely on the office in our efforts to grow the industry in Southern Oregon. Please continue support for our efforts. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, there's another Mutt and Jeff routine here on labor. Ron here is with the production side. My name is Charles Carlson. I serve as business manager of the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, Local 488. We contract with out-of-state productions to supply local technicians for feature film and television projects produced in the Pacific Northwest. Our jobs range from the carpenters and painters that build the sets to the electrician and grips that make the movies. Our membership is statewide in Oregon and Washington. We have over 200 members in Oregon and hundreds of others who work on a temporary basis. Without local film projects, these people do not work. They depend on our organization and a strong and effective film and video office to bring productions to Oregon. I've been working in this industry in various parts of the country for over 20 years, and I know firsthand the fierce intensity of the competition. The Oregon Film and Video Office is among the best in the country, and I respectfully request your support for their budget. A well-funded and competitive film and video office is crucial if Oregon wants the revenue and employment that film and television production represent. On June 14th, Oregon will host its 8th television movie of the week, the most prolific type of production in the industry. For years, these lower-budget productions would only shoot in Canada, where the exchange rate and rebates would save them thousands of dollars. The Oregon Film and Video Office was instrumental in bringing producers and my organization together to forge a new nationwide labor agreement. This agreement has successfully brought some of this work back to the United States, and the overwhelming majority of these have been made in Oregon. 7 television movies have been filmed in Oregon in the last 18 months. 90% of the technical crew and 90% of the actors were Oregonians. The average weekly wage for these people was over $1,400 plus pension and benefits. This is money that stays in Oregon and is a direct result of the efforts of the film and video office. As a point of conclusion, film production is an environmentally clean industry that provides high-paying jobs for Oregonians and millions of dollars in revenues for Oregon businesses. Please support the Oregon film and video budget. And a side note, though, I was the stand-in for the Kevin Cox.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ron Mitchell. I'm a television producer. And I've lived and worked in Los Angeles since 1960. And 6 months ago, I relocated my family permanently to Depot Bay. I love Oregon, and my hope, my fervent prayer is to make all the rest of my shows in Oregon and never have to go back to Los Angeles. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today. I support the Oregon Film and Video Office budget. It's a very modest amount at $475,000 a year, but it is critical. It's very critical if you're interested in getting companies to shoot in Oregon. Briefly, my professional training, my background started in legitimate theater in 1959. By 71, I was working as a production manager and a producer in independently financed films. In 83, I began my television career in a series called Falcon Crest. And then I did Doogie Howser, My So-Called Life, numerous TV pilots, miniseries, movie of the weeks. For the past 5 years, I've been producing primetime and cable movies for 20th Century Fox and for the Disney Channel. Last year, I worked in Oregon for the first time, produced a Disney Channel movie called Halloween Town, starring Debbie Reynolds. We filmed in St. Helens, Scappoose, and in Portland. It was a film office that found the perfect location for us, the town square at St. Helens. They were there to direct us to the proper city, the proper county officials. I met Charlie through them, and I never thought I'd sit down and work out a favorable agreement between a production company and a union, but he has since become essentially a partner for me in making movies up here. They stood by us, the film commission, David, Veronica, Patty. I was a novice here. They they stood by me until I got the lay of the land. They were there if I needed help. I felt very, very, very secure, and without a doubt, they were the best film office team I've ever worked with. Halloween Town hired 95 Oregon film craftspersons for anywhere up to 4 to 10 weeks. Only 13 additional crew people were brought from Los Angeles. We hired Oregon extra players for a total of 632 production days. Oregon actors totaled 28 production days. And I have a long list, which I read, of over 25 different kinds of local services that we use. We came in for a grand total in goods, services, and wages spent directly in Oregon of just under $2 million for that one show. Oregon really needs a well-funded film office if it's to compete, not only against other states, but against Canada and an emerging Australia market. There were 250 TV movies made last year. Canada has an investment program in place that stole 80% of those movies from American soil. They've been doing it for several years now. Therefore, in addition to the base budget for the Oregon Film and Video Office, I would like to suggest to this committee that an additional investment be made to stimulate growth of the film and TV industry in Oregon. The concept of an Oregon Production Investment Fund has been developed by the industry here in Oregon, and the outline of this concept is very simple. Provide $2 million fund administered by the Board of Directors of the Oregon Film and Video Office. The fund would be available to producers of film and television productions for up to $100,000 for 20 shows over the next 2 years. The funds must be used for Oregon goods and services. 75% of the filming must be in Oregon, 75% of the crew must be from Oregon, and a training component would be developed to give Oregonians hands-on experience in the industry. As a matter of fact, we used, I think it was 3 or 4 of what we would call trainees, but we were training people from Oregon who came along on the last show and actually got hands-on experience and were paid for it as well. The $2 million investment will return approximately $40 million in direct spending into Oregon's economy, and it will return over $5 million to the state treasury, according to the state's economist. This bill is about Oregon paychecks and the creation of Oregon jobs. This is not a giveaway. This is an investment with a direct and immediate return of that investment. I believe that this is an important investment and will more than pay for itself and generate additional revenue for other important efforts, and I appreciate the consideration in this request. In closing, I would like to strongly encourage this committee to support the full budget for the Oregon Film and Video Office. It's a key factor in my ability to bring additional production to the state. One more thing, made note, there is the notion of a separate film commission for Southern Oregon, and as a producer, I would not use it. What I do is just, it's too fast moving, and I have to have one point of contact when I come to the state, and I need a single point of entry. And I don't know why you would want to create another entity that would be in competition with itself. And I think that would be a waste of money. Thank you.
I can assure you that being from Southern Oregon, it's not our intention to break off and secede from the rest of the state. We recognize that people have differences of opinion, but we've been trying to build a PR campaign in this state, so one Oregon is not Portland and the rest of the state, and maybe we need to move that same attitude to the moving film industry, is that it's one Oregon, not two separate distinct areas. And I want you to know that I appreciate the concerns that have been brought to us by those that support two functions, but you're best qualified is to operate under one umbrella rather than trying to crowd under two umbrellas.
I love that.
Thank you. Thank you for coming up. Were there any questions? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler, I have a question. Perhaps it should be directed towards Mr. Wolfson, and I'm just not sure who would have
okay.
answer to it, but in relationship to the $950,000 that Oregon does spend for the film and video, do we know how that compares to other states, what they may spend for similar types of activities to attract film and video offices to their states or film and video producers to their states?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Butler, or Representative Butler, the range is all over the place. From some smaller states that have very little film production, for example, North Dakota, may spend in the neighborhood of $200,000 to $250,000, on up to the province or state of Queensland, Australia, which spends $20 million a year. Most domestic U.S. film commissions, we are more or less in the middle of the pack.
Let me ask you this. Again, I apologize for my hoarseness. I'm fighting allergies here, but what is the real focus that we need in Oregon? Is it a method to have a professional sound stage where we can really offer the local community but a quality program with a sound stage and the mechanical and artistic people to go with that?
Mr. Chairman, the soundstage issue is the one that remains to be an issue in the metro area. There are no larger stages for television, larger feature film stages that you would see like on a Paramount or Universal lot. There have been recently stages built in the Eugene area with Chambers Communications, and there is a production facility in Medford that is available. It's still an issue in the metro area, but what we've done is used available warehouses, those types of things. To me, I think that the main issue hurdle we're facing right now is this competition from Canada, as Ron Mitchell outlined. And if they're, I think having some incentives to help better compete with Canada in terms of recruiting out-of-state production is a very critical, I think, next step.
To share with the members in Medford, they took an old abandoned pear shed, packing shed, and turned it into a quality soundstage. The technology and equipment in there is just beyond belief. And this was a facility that was going nowhere on a quick track. And they took the building and recovered it and got it back on a functional basis. So, Representative Butler.
Mr. Chairman, did when they got back on track, did they get back on track for pairs, or did they get back on track for movies?
My full feature is about ready to come out.
Oh, well, I've done some calculations here, and it's based upon the exchange fluctuations and rates with Mexico or with Canada. It appears that if we paid the horse at $75 a day, we could probably attract more.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
If I make a set the record straight, I was the Kevin Conner.
Okay. Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point, I was going to briefly overview the immediate opportunity section in the budget and the strategic reserve fund. I think maybe I'll save that for tomorrow and just let Mr. Lee, who is testifying to that, come forward. So, Roger Lee is the Economic Development Director for Baker City and County.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you. Well, I'm a freshman testifier, first time, so I'll try to be too nervous here. I have two handouts for the committee.
Would you identify yourself?
Roger Lee, Baker City County Economic Development Director.
Thank you.
I have my written testimony, or my testimony here, and also an example of how the department works within the activities there in my county. First, again, appreciate the opportunity to provide a rural perspective regarding the value of initiatives administered by the Oregon Economic Development Department And my comments on behalf of my department, which serves Baker City and Baker County, for which I'm the director, and also on behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association, for which I'm currently serving as vice president. That's an association of other professionals throughout the state that work in economic development. Just 12 years ago, Baker County's average annual unemployment was in the 18% range, with monthly spikes that counted nearly one-fourth of our workforce among the jobless. Although we still have an annual average unemployment rate of nearly twice the state, thankfully it is now in single digits, approximately 8.5 for 1998. It may be easy to think this progress is just a simple result of a strong state economy and national economy. Unfortunately, it is not. While Baker County has moved from 36 of 36 at the very bottom of the state for per capita income up to 25, neighboring Grant County is still struggling with low employment rates, high unemployment, currently at 14%, 1998 was 14%, and they're currently in the 18% range. So it's the situation there is still rather drastic. Primary reason for Baker County, that Baker County's been able to get things done over the past decade has been a partnership with the Oregon Economic Development Department. We've utilized nearly every program and initiative, but of all those programs, a few stand out as being very crucial to that success and making everything happen. One of the handouts that passed out was a summary of our economic development strategic plan for Baker County. It's actually quite a bit larger document, but I just summarized it. I know you get enough paper. But it's got a matrix there, and I've highlighted the different programs where we consider Oregon Economic Development Department a key partner in trying to get things done out there. So it's more for your reference to see where the department's working on all the different initiatives for our county and our city. Over the years, the Strategic Reserve Fund has helped culminate several very important community efforts, including the National Historic Oregon Trail Interpretive Center, which leveraged a $10 million investment from the Federal Bureau of Land Management. This critical project has helped fuel new economic life in the community, been the demand generator for a growing visitor industry, which we really didn't have prior to that, and essentially put Baker County on the map throughout the Pacific Northwest. Strategic Reserve Fund has also played a crucial role in business development in Baker County. In 1996, following on the heels of the permanent closure of our last primary lumber mill, and at the time our largest manufacturing employer, Ellingson Lumber, a Strategic Reserve Fund award encouraged Bale Manufacturing, a Midwest-based company. Actually, they were Inc. Magazine's Entrepreneur of the Year for 1994, based out of Columbus, Nebraska, to pick our community over other neighboring states and communities within those neighboring states. Without the award, which was used to help the company purchase the most environmentally friendly paint line available, which is crucial to their operations and their whole mindset of doing business, Balin would likely not be in Baker City today. And just for reference, that was a $6 million investment. Essentially helped the community create its first industrial park and training center, which the company offered to build space for a new training center, industry training center, and also 60 new jobs there in the community. At the same time, we lost our primary mill, so it played a crucial factor in terms of strategic reserve fund. We would not have been able to really attempt it. Also, the media opportunity funds play a big role in the industry sector outreach and targeted training. We've had several businesses that have utilized targeted training dollars to expand their businesses because they find it difficult to find the type of employees with the training they need. A good example of that would be SMR Industries, which utilized targeted training dollars, worked with a local community college, and put together a package of training that they continue to use that helped them grow from a business of 8 employees to one of our major manufacturers, about 55 to 60 employees. So that program works really well as well. And I think that in talking with my colleagues around the state and as the vice president of the Oregon Economic Development Association, that we find that is increasingly important with training throughout the state, not just in my part of the state, but also in Southern Oregon, Far Eastern Oregon, and throughout, as labor is being increasingly important issue. Again, with the increasingly tight labor market, this incentive has often played a deciding factor, even in our area, for whether or not a company will make an investment into a new market or expand its employment and production. And on the industry development side, needed opportunity funds help take opportunities that maybe don't fit of certain programs specifically, but which are very, very important to the future of communities throughout the state. In industry development, needed opportunity funds has helped Baker and Malheur counties, from which Representative Butler represents, to pool resources and leverage private and public resources to launch a comprehensive coordinated business recruitment campaign. The project and award, which made it possible, leverage significant resources from other sources to better equip and diversify this part of Oregon to make it more economically sustainable. Most importantly, this effort is beginning to produce good results, and that's what we all want to see out of these investments. My concluding remarks, to maintain a flexible resource for opportunity-driven projects and initiatives just makes good sense for Oregon. Perhaps more than any other program, and we've dealt with nearly all of them, probably less on film and video than we have with others. It's been a while since they made Paint Your Wagon in Baker County. But needed opportunity funds give Oregon communities, especially rural communities, a leg up on our competition from neighboring states, and for Canada for that matter. I highly encourage you to keep intact, if not enhanced, this component of the Oregon Economic Development Department's budget. Thanks for the opportunity to present this information, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Butler, it's probably more in the form of a statement than it is a question, Mr. Chair. It probably doesn't hurt to have the former Regional Development Economic Development Officer become your leading county commissioner either. Roger has the former RDO is his new county commissioner there, and he's has a great deal of expertise and access to the department, and that's helped a great deal. And we appreciated the RDO and the other regional development officers that have been assigned to Southeastern Oregon. They do an excellent job. I would say that by and large, we just haven't ever had a bad apple in the bunch.
Thank you. Further comments or questions? Well, thank you very much. Mr. Scott.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, maybe I can just orient where we are. We're under the Behind the Green tab, Community Development Fund. And if you look on the page 4 where the preliminary investment plan of the Economic Development Commission is, or better yet, maybe even look at page 5, which lists the 5 categories of programs. Essentially, we have now completed the regional investment section yesterday. We've completed the statewide investment section with the exception of Mike Thorne's testimony on channel deepening. You just heard Roger's testimony was on the immediate opportunity section on the far right. So what we have left to go is the small and emerging business assistance, and that's what we're going to finish today. So when we're finished today, we'll be done with the Community Development Fund with the exception of Mrs. Thorne's testimony.
All right.
The category that we refer to as small and emerging business assistance has a planned expenditure of $3.4 million in the preliminary investment plan on page 4. To speak to that, I would like to introduce Bill Buckley, who is the manager of the business and industry team within the department, which is responsible for contracting for the services that are provided in this category. Mr. Buckley will introduce the subject and let you know what the commission is trying to do with this money, and then there are several folks that wish to be heard on the subject.
All right, thank you. Well, very welcome.
Chairman, excuse me, I've got a cold too. Chairman Hannon and members of the committee, good morning. I'm Bill Buckley. I'm the manager of the business and industry team within the Oregon Economic Development Department. Small business support is one of the functional areas that is a responsibility of the team.
I'm relatively new to the department. I've been there about a year. Before that, my experience has all been in business and industry in Oregon. Most recently, 12 years down at Teledyne Huacheng in Albany. I have been there a year, so it's starting to change some, but part of my interest in coming and part of the reason I was hired was to try to bring an outside private sector set of eyes to what goes on at the agency, and I'm still endeavoring to do that. We have some guests here today who will speak to parts of what goes on in small and emerging business. They'll introduce themselves more completely when they speak. Let me just indicate quickly that they are Sam Brooks. Mr. Brooks is the chairman of the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs and president of his own small business. Sam is also a member of the State Advisory Board for the Small Business Development Centers, as am I. We also have Don Kramer. Don Kramer is an attorney with Black & Helterlein, a firm in Portland. Don is a member, as is Sam, of the recently appointed Governor's Small Business Council and has been very involved with us and others in starting initiatives having to do with new and emerging businesses. Also in the blue jacket just behind me, she was just behind me, Joan Shea of Changing Creatively. She owns the company in Eugene. Joan is also an appointee to the Governor's Small Business Council. I was going to take a few minutes and just quickly overview what's going on in small and emerging business, and in view of the time, I'll take even fewer minutes. But I'd like to set the stage and then turn it over to the people who are actually involved along with us and our team in the day-to-day delivery of services to small and emerging business around the state. To do that, I'd like to speak quickly to the mission and what services are provided, then talk about the delivery strategy, and finally end up with the way that we're looking at the budget. So I'll go through this relatively quickly. The mission is quite simple, from looking at the enabling legislation down through the direction we've had from the legislature, the governor's office, our own commission, and others. We're to nurture existing small business within the state, provide a climate that encourages more small businesses to grow and stay. We're particularly to look at disadvantaged parts of the state and encourage the growth of small business in those areas. Those areas can be either rural or they can be disadvantaged parts of our metro area. It doesn't matter. It is one Oregon, and what we're trying to do is bring more small businesses throughout the state. To do that, we provide a variety of services, some direct, most through others. Those services range from basic educational services, classes, how do you do financial accounting, to counseling and mentoring, how do you put together a business plan and work through it in the first year or two. Capital access, we have three programs of our own and work with others to provide, make sure capital is available to small business. We also work to connect small business with a variety of organizations and initiatives around the state so that a small business person has the best possible chance of succeeding in Oregon. To deliver these services, we have three distinct parts, although they are all interconnected to what we do. The first is direct services to small business. At the agency, we have three small business finance programs that deal with small business directly. We also have programs such as Brand Oregon that go out into the community and work with small business and service providers to help them understand what the benefit may be to first branding their product and then secondly to using the attributes of Oregon to push the brand. Finally, we offer technical assistance in the form of advice on where to go to find things that the agency doesn't do. We cooperate with other state agencies, with federal partners, and with higher education in this direct delivery of some services. Beyond that, we deliver most of the services on behalf of the state through partners. These partners begin with, and the backbone of that delivery system, are the small business development centers, the network. 19 centers on 21 locations around the state is the backbone for our delivery of basic business services to small business around the state. With that as a backbone, we then look at individual areas of need around the state and add to the small business development centers a series of specialty service providers who can address either particular populations or particular needs. These particular needs could be the challenges that a minority entrepreneur faces that go above and beyond the challenges that any entrepreneur faces, or they could be the challenge of delivering services at distance in rural parts of the state. It could be a very specific area of need. How do I contract with the federal government or the state government? We begin, first and foremost, before the contracts are written, with insisting that there be a memorandum of understanding between these contract providers and the small business development centers in their area. The point here is cooperation, no duplication, and we're driving toward a common performance-based measuring system. These two levels working together in the last year under a rubric that we call originally the Small Business Coalition and is now the Small Business Assistance Network, and you'll hear more about that from Sam Brooks, have been trying to bring this system closer together than it ever has before in terms of one seamless system, so that when a small business owner comes to the system, they quickly get the services that that provider can offer, and then they are quickly referred to other places for the other things that they need. This is still a work in progress. It will be a lot better a year from now and 2 years from now, but it's a lot better now than it was 11 months ago when I joined the agency. Beyond those two areas, our services and the services delivered through others, we have special initiatives that we work with entities around the state on. Some examples of this are the new Emerging Business Initiative, which Don Kramer will speak to. This seeks to enhance the climate in Oregon for rapidly growing companies. We hope that small businesses will get through that first very tenuous 2 or 3 years and get into a stage where they grow quickly and we have another Tech or another Nike, and that's what this particular thing is all about. We're also working on things like technology transfer. We recently spun out to a private nonprofit a technology transfer responsibility. We've recently convened a joint working board group, our commission and the Oregon University Systems Office of the Chancellor and the Higher Ed Commission, a working group to work on bringing more research and development capability to the state, largely in support of small and emerging business. The base services, the specialty services, and the initiatives are the things that we are attempting to do in the next biennium, all wrapped within the small and emerging business budget area that's in the document that's in your notebook. Bill Scott just overviewed it, and if there are questions about it in detail, I can answer those as you ask them. In general, what we have tried to do there is address the parts I just described. Base budget for basic services, an initiative budget for initiatives that involve small business development centers, other service providers, and perhaps others who don't provide services but are important advisors to the process. We will also be looking very strongly to the regional investment part of the budget. This has been an important part historically in Oregon for support of small business as regional strategies, as they were called, now regional investment boards, made multi-regional grants to support targeted training, targeted marketing programs. Those things all support small business, and we will be looking also, as we have in the past, for the support of the counties and the regional boards to further help us in this effort. With that, I'd like to stop, and Chairman Hannon, with your direction, either turn it over to my presenters or answer questions.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Yee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Buckley, it seems to me you're one of the two programs that can give us information about how many jobs are created, what's the cost per job, and the return in investment. I think that's very helpful because then you can find out which program is more cost-effective and therefore merits increase so we can help more small businesses. But I do need a few more information. Can you tell us what small businesses are included under
these three line items in your budget, what is it included under, as your small business development centers, that's called small business development centers, but what small businesses are included under minority business services, and what is it under small and emerging business and minority business initiation, because one item you show flat funding for next biennium. The other one shows a third increase in the budget, and the other one doubles the current funding. We need to know what is the cost effectiveness of each program. So it would be very helpful if you can tell us which ones are included under which lines and what kind of statewide offices do they have, so we'll understand what kind of accessibility these programs are to the community. So basically two questions.
Chairman Hannon, Senator Yee, perhaps I can give the front end of that answer here, and I may need to give a more detailed part of the second part of my answer separately in writing, but let me start. The first line item for the Small Business Development Centers, these are, as I mentioned, there are 19 centers on 21 locations around the state, and that's intended to be a budget line item for their base current service budget. That's only part of their overall budget, but that's intended to be just for the current delivery of basic business services, and it's only for the small business development centers. That's the first line. The second line, the minority base, does not have any specific organizations in it. That's that line, the people who provide services under that line are chosen as a result of a request for proposal process. That number can change from year to year. Most of them tend to be single site providers. We are in the process right now of putting the RFP together so that we will have it ready so the process can begin as we look into the next biennium. But at this point, there are no specific contractors listed in that line item.
Can you give us the names of the providers?
Certainly.
Under this line item, minority and women-owned business.
Chairman Hannon, Senator Yee, in the current biennium, under that line item, we have five providers. We have the Government Contract Acquisition Program. That program is headquartered in Coos Bay, has offices in Eugene and Portland. We have the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs in Portland. We have the Oregon, I know it by the acronym, Oregon Native American Business Network, used to be Enterprise Network, located in Portland, but serving the reservation Native Americans. We have the Southern Oregon Women's Access to Credit, a nonprofit in the southern part of the state. And we have
one office.
Mm-hmm. And we have the Oregon Business Network in Portland. It's a collection of independent consultants working together, so I guess you would say one office. And then in the initiative, the third category, in the initiative, currently we don't have anything going on right now. We had some initiatives there during the biennium, but there's nothing current. For the next biennium, none of those dollars have been allocated. Well, obviously, since we don't have them yet, you haven't allocated them, but we haven't attached specific names to those dollars. I do have a list of organizations that are interested in those dollars.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
So are you talking about new programs for under the emerging businesses?
For initiatives?
Yes, and minority business initiatives.
Chairman Hannon, Senator Yee, correct. New initiatives, the point of that item is to try to provide dollars to get things started up. So you get, for instance, we've got a number of entities out there that are all doing websites and would love to have some sort of umbrella website for the whole state. Some money to get that framed, get it started, and then turn it over to them for ongoing maintenance may be one of those kinds of initiative projects. They're intended to have a finite duration, and at the end of the process, it's the private sector that's benefiting from them and carrying them forward. So that's why we think of them, maybe initiative's a bad word, but the way I think of it in terms is it's a finite effort intended to kickstart and get something going.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Wouldn't it be more money from our investment if we invest in programs that have proven to be successful rather than to go into new programs that we don't know what is the success of the program? I think that it would be, we get a lot more out of the investment if we invest in programs that have proven its success and help more Oregonians that way.
Okay. Chairman Hannon, Senator Yee, I agree with the Small Business Development Centers at the state board level and working with Sandy Cutler, the executive director. We're looking at the results of the individual centers and trying to determine whether or not or what it's going to take to get that network up to its full potential. So in that area, we are looking at what's successful, looking at the places that they need to do better, and we're trying within the framework to move them ahead. With the second line, the minority outreach, the contractors that we have right now for this biennium are all being evaluated. The results of what they did is being evaluated with the idea of trying to learn from whether or not we're doing things that end up really helping small business or not. As we look to the next biennium, the preponderance of what we're going to be doing is looking at programs that have been run and trying to measure the results and trying to be able to say, did we get a good investment? We need some room to be able to try new things and do some just creative thinking on our part to try to bring some new approaches to what goes on in the state. And for that reason, the initiative with some money for something we've never tried before, but we have on a reasoned basis feel that we ought to try, or the private sector is saying, give us some help in this area. I think there is some judgment on our part that leads to the conclusion that it would make sense to have some money, you know, in an area like that where you're not attaching it to an existing program, but you're trying to get ahead of what's happening in the state. Certainly nurturing emerging industries that right now are just on the cusp of beginning to become important is an area kind of like that. There's no existing program in the state to push biotech ahead. But there's a very big interest at the Oregon Health Sciences Center and among some businesses in the Portland metro area in seeing that emerge. I don't know if it's a smart investment yet to try to make that thing emerge, but until we try and then come back and report to you how we did, we won't know. So there is some need for that sort of dollar that we can use creatively, and then there'll be some times when we have to come back and say it didn't work and we learned from that, but hopefully if we use our judgment correctly, we'll have more wins than losses.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say when resources are limited, it is a lot... Our confidence would be a lot higher if we put money in programs that have proven to be successful rather than try new programs without knowing whether we're going to get return on our investment or not. I have prepared a chart using all the figures given to me by Mr. Scott, and I would like you to verify the accuracy of this chart, because it's a lot easier if we have all six programs before us and compare the cost effectiveness, job created, and return on investment. Then we know how to spend our money wisely.
I've directed Mr. Scott and the staff. They're going to meet with you on those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
We have approximately 10 minutes, and the Senate goes into session, and somebody's probably going to put a call on. But I'd like to move ahead if we can. Senator, have you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a comment about the
Small Emerging Business and Minority Business Initiative. I respectfully disagree with Senator Yee that we should stick with program. In this particular area, it looks to me like emerging is the key word here, and we ought to be trying new things. And yes, sometimes there will be failures, but hopefully prior to trying and spending dollars on these, there's been some research and some idea about why this is a good thing to move ahead on and actually spend it not on programs but on actual businesses to let them emerge and become thriving. And to me, that's what this section is all about. And I would much rather have money spent on new, possible, emerging, developing businesses than programs. Any.
Okay. Representative Patrick.
I just wanted to say that I'm just concerned about how this was put together. If we don't even have the results back yet, if we're still evaluating the effectiveness of these programs that the state put out on an RFP, I'm familiar with our Small Business Development Center in our community. It is being utilized very, very effectively. It's hard for people to even get appointments within timely manners, and I'm just wondering why there's the cut that's occurring for Small Business Development Centers, it appears, and then we're adding, I don't mind giving some money to new ones, some innovative programs and things, but we're adding so substantially to these minority business services and small and emerging business and minority business initiatives, and we don't have the results back. I feel like we're putting frosting on the cake when we don't even have the basic cake done. And I know that, you know, kind of the core of businesses across the state of Oregon are small businesses. I'm just wondering how that result was reached. Was that explored while we're cutting small business development centers and we're going off after these new initiatives that yet remain, in my opinion, unproven to any great extent. Can you just address that?
Quick response, please.
Chairman Hannon, Representative Patridge. The dollars for the Small Business Development Center Network, their requested budget of $2.5 million in total, which was partly basic services, partly to replace the one-stop program, a two-year federal program that runs out, and then partly for initiatives like the websites and some distance learning and some internal training programs that they want to try. It's really kind of a three-part budget. And what we've tried to do in the numbers that you have are address the basic service budget. That's $1.8 million. We have in the initiatives, in that $1 million, one of the specific things that fits in there is website, distance learning, connecting at distance, various providers. We have within the regional investment pot things about how do we do, like when the feds drop a program on us for 2 years, it makes sense to continue this thing, but the state needs to stop, take a deep breath, and think to itself, what's the best way to do that? It may be the best way to do that is a multi-regional strategy coming out of regional investment. At the end of the day, at the end of the next biennium, when I'm sitting here 2 years from now and explaining to you what we did, the Small Business Development Center network budget, direct and in its working with the other providers and with the regions, is going to be, they will have ended up having more revenue going through, or more resources going through there than what they've even asked for. It's just we're chopping it up differently and taking specific looks at specific parts of it. Probably the single place that could have the biggest heartburn would be on the base services, where we say it's $1.8 million. They say, well, we've had inflation. There's a few. Every agency up here has that problem. We're dealing with it. They're dealing with it. I understand that. But I'm confident that overall, by the time we get through with the program and we look at the parts of what they need and then combine it with what all the other folks need, it's still the backbone of our delivery system. And the keeping it healthy and turning it ahead is going to happen.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to see a list of what those parts are that are more funding, because I don't see it in the budget the way they're presented to me, and I don't know how to parse it out. So if you can give me a list of what those pieces are that provide more funding, I need to see that.
For the Small Business Development Center.
What's that?
For the Small Business Development Center. Chairman Hannon, Representative Matthews, be grateful.
Representative Butler. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just three different items. I just take the 95-97
Small Business Development Center budget and do a standard roll-up, as the governor has done on so many of the other budgets for the two biennia since that time. It would come out to $2.575 million. And so we're not flat funding it. We're actually decreasing the funding when we talk about 1.8. Second issue is that it's been my great pleasure on the General Government Subcommittee for the Ways and Means to recently provide $500,000+ for minority enterprises and the minority commissions. And I think that if we take a look at the missions of the two minority enterprise and business services and initiatives, we probably will find some duplication. So I would like to have an exact mission statement so that we'll know what these missions are. And finally, prior to my service here in state government, it was my pleasure to serve on a council of governments, Idaho Regional Development, and we did have minority business development funds and microenterprise loan funds for small and privately held small minority businesses, and that came through our council of governments as opposed to a state program, and I felt like that as a member of that council, that was always adequately funded from the federal level, and I don't think that we have to go out and do a great deal of experimenting and studying. I think that there's probably ample studies that indicate that those funds are can be utilized in such fashion. I for one feel very strongly that we have, from our small business development centers, all 19 of them and 21 locations across the state, have received a great deal of input, a very, very good result. And I would encourage the Oregon Community Development Fund folks to take a look at the possibility of having one set of oversight, one set of clearinghouse, if you will, for the issues, setting up the mission statements and making sure that they're administered in such a fashion that we do accomplish so that we have fewer chiefs and more Indians basically getting the money to the, getting the water to the end of the row, if you will.
Okay. Was there any more you want to make in your comment? Okay. Senator, just...
Can you give me something in writing on the Oregon Business Network, sort of how long we've had it, what it does, what the results are that we've gotten out of it? There must be something.
Chairman Hammond, Senator Dukes, are you referring to the Oregon Business Assistance Network? That was the second stage of what I referred to as the Oregon Small Business Coalition.
I find that something that's a network of contacts,
yes,
or something.
Yes, and we will.
Okay.
Yes, and we.
I'm interested in knowing what methodology do you use in determining the return on investment on the small businesses. I don't want to take up the committee time.
Well, if we can meet with you,
yes.
We're under really a tight time frame here, so I'd like to move on.
Mm-hmm.
We have some other presenters who have come here.
Mm-hmm. So
the committee has been excused, by the way, for about 20 after 10, so if we can stay with it, we'll complete our schedule today. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chairman Hannon and members of the committee. My name is Sam Brooks. I do have some material to give to the committee.
Go ahead.
As you are receiving the material, after hearing the previous conversation, I almost need to digress from the presentation that I have to give you. But I won't digress much, but I will tell you that the organizations that have participated in the network, organizations that are not experimental, they are organizations that have been around for 15 years in the state of Oregon providing services. And the primary reason, both at the last legislative session and with the governor, for minority business participation has not been that it was a new experiment, but because it was not included in the work and the budgeting previously for businesses throughout the state of Oregon. It was an attention to detail that had been previously overlooked. So on the part of the Native American Enterprises Network, which serves six centers around the state, and not only Native American, but also the population in those same areas, the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs, of which I'm the president and chairman of the board, with 500 companies throughout the state of Oregon that are Asian, Hispanic, Native American, African American, and in fact European American, Hispanic American. We serve everyone. Our objective has been to move us from where we have been to where we ought to be. Let me just go with the presentation that I have, because I know you have, this is going to be very short. This may be the shortest presentation that I've ever made. Let me say that I would simply urge you to support the department's budget. If you will note in my presentation, not because it's perfect, not because the department has gotten all its issues right, not because that Oregon's rural, distressed minority women and small businesses have been all problems have already been taken care of, but because the department has begun the effective implementation of the directions given by the 1997 legislature and the governor. The legislature in 1997 directed the department to develop collaboration with community-based, small business, and business growth and development organizations around the state to maximize its resources, to develop evaluative criteria to judge the effectiveness, and to move rural and urban distressed communities closer. I note that some giant steps have been taken in that regard. The following organizations, and that's what we were referring to earlier, have been collaborating around the state with the department, and those organizations include the Government Acquisitions Program, Impact Business Consultants, which is primarily a Hispanic organization, the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs, ONABIN, the Small Business Development Centers, which are part of this network, the Southern Oregon Economic Access to Credit, the Associated Economic Development Districts of Oregon, which you may be familiar, the Oregon Downtown Development Association, and Rural Development Initiative. This is almost unprecedented in the state of Oregon that all of these organizations actually work with each other and we travel around the state. My director, Jorge Guerra, is here in the back, and Jorge, we don't establish offices all the state. We collaborate with the Small Business Development Center. Jorge, for instance, spent time in Medford, where Hispanics are 15% of the population and do not participate with the Chamber of Commerce in Medford. I sit on the board of directors for the Portland Chamber of Commerce. We have reciprocal agreements with the Chamber. So we have been trying to establish those same kind of relationships around the state where we don't have to create things new. We, in fact, take what exists and try to bring people closer together. Over the past 2 years, the group have worked closely to develop a seamless delivery system to small businesses throughout the state. The initial goals included a memorandum of understanding so that we all are working from the same page. We've done that. Cross-training of staff from all delivery groups, we're doing that. Referral tracking system to collect data monthly so we know what's being done, doing that. Performance and outcome measures, we talked about it. We have those already in place where we know exactly what everyone is supposed to be measuring. So what any organization is measuring is not very different than any other organization is measuring. Web page hot links so that when you walk into Burns, the information that you get will be just the same as when you walk into Astoria. So we're doing, these are the kind of systems that we're trying to put into place. It doesn't matter whether you walk into the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs or you walk into the Small Business Development Center in Eugene, you ought to find out who is available to do business around the state and what their expertise is, because not everybody has the same expertise. Joint marketing efforts. We have decided that obviously all of us ought not to be out developing separate marketing tools. So why don't we develop something that works for all if we've done that? When we did a small business day in April here at the Capitol, we were all here together. When we put out press releases, we try to do it about the network together. We have hired staff people. We have had graduate fellows to work with us to help achieve some of these goals. These are in place. The network members have affirmed their commitment to excellence and cooperation by identifying the goals. Without going further into some of you have it in front of you, we have an initiative summit even planned for the fall of 1999 where we bring all of the business and organizations from around the state together to do what we thought was a great novel idea of the legislature in 1997, that as a state in Oregon, I think, can accomplish it, maybe some other states can't, that we as a people can actually work together. And that's what we've been doing. Not at the behest of moving one organization down the ladder at the in attempt to move another one up, but actually working together. In fact, the growth in this state, Hispanic businesses grew 232% in the five-year business survey. Asian businesses grew over 100%. African-American business grew 82%. Women businesses grew. That's part of the future of this state. And the idea was to make sure anybody that was serving these organizations, we're going to make sure that they are maximizing. In fact, a study done by the Patrick Baranda from the Oregon Native American Business Enterprise Network indicated that if minority businesses were performing as majority businesses in this state, taxes alone would be another $60+ million to the state of Oregon. And we think that makes some sense. And just the last couple of items, the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs is also a member of the North Northeast Economic Development Alliance. Sheila Holden is here. And the alliance has worked closely with Senator Ferrioli and Senator Gordley over since the last session to see how the rural communities in Oregon and Northeast Portland as a distressed community could kind of hook up. Jorge Guerra, Sheila Holden, and she may say a word about that, spent 3 days in Central and Eastern Oregon. And as a result of that, we held a business incubator conference, and we run a 40,000-square-foot business incubator in Portland to teach them how incubation could be useful to rural communities in Oregon. And as a result of that, they sent a truckload of lumber to Northeast Portland to help build houses. So we've been sending tokens back and forth, but we're doing some good stuff. As I indicated earlier, Jorge Guerra has been working around the state to move the rural communities and the minority communities closer together. We have tried to act as a catalyst between all of the ethnic communities, the Asian community, the Hispanic community, the Native American community, and the African American community, and the European American community, so that we meet on a regular basis, and wherever there have been gaps, we begin to close those. So I would just close my comments by saying the idea, both by the legislature and the governor, that suggested that all of the organizations in the state of Oregon ought to be working together, determine what their assets were, and make sure that those assets were being used collectively on behalf of the entire state of Oregon is being done.
Great, thank you. Welcome.
Thanks, Senator Hannon. My name is Don Kramer. As Bill Beckley mentioned, I am actually vice chairman of the Governor's Small Business Council. I also serve as chairman of the Oregon State Bar Business Law Section, which represents about 1,200 lawyers statewide, and one of the co-founders of the Oregon Emerging Business Initiative. Real quickly, I have given each of you a packet that has some information, including a PowerPoint presentation that talks about what we set out to do about a year ago, what was accomplished, and where we're going, so you can sort of see some specifics there. I want to do two things in the next 3 minutes very quickly here. Is one, if I want to respond to Senator Yee and to Representative Patridge and Representative Butler, and then two, just very quickly focus on where we're headed. Senator Yee, I think I met you 15 years ago when I was a student at Willamette and founded a conference on entrepreneurship over there, and I have been sort of a zealot for emerging growth business, and I can tell you this is the first time I've ever sat in front of this committee. And part of that is because Bill Scott and the Oregon Economic Development Department really have done a good job over the last biennium of reaching out and connecting me with Sam Brooks, with Sandy Cutler. And I think what I'm here to say today is we want to help make that continue. And Rob, I hope that Bill gets you that list of small business development centers, and I want to be a partner with Sandy Cutler. But the small business development centers are part of the solution. They're not the total solution, so I'll just sort of say that up front. And I want to just basically focus on where we're going here a little bit. And some of it relates to the Emerging Business Initiative, which I'm not going to go into today because I've talked to most of you about that already. First, on the emerging business front, it has been primarily focused up in the Portland metro area and somewhat down Eugene. Bob Moss and Steve Corey and some CPAs, really the search providers have gotten together here and said, we want to create a seamless statewide relationship that we're working together. It's very similar to what Sam has on the minority business side.
And so over the next biennium, what we want to do is go and have some regional forums and really identify the emerging businesses. And in that process, we're doing something different. In the past, we typically in this area have gone through the Small Business Development Centers, and they're definitely a partner there. But we also want to bring to bear higher education. We're working very closely with Oregon University System, Steve Reno down at Southern Oregon University, OIT, and then also Eastern Oregon University. We want to sort of tie higher ed into this model somehow, because particularly for the emerging businesses, it's the knowledge that is really going to create the new jobs. In that respect, have really, you know, probably 9 months ago, went to Bill and Brett Wilcox and Tom Imason and said, you know, it would be really be nice if we could really get higher ed and economic development working more closely. There's been some historical ties here. And to their benefit, Brett and Tom have set up a joint work group that is really focusing on how do we tie economic development and higher ed issues together. Technology Transfer Oregon has one of the lowest track records. We're trying to improve things there, and so that's a place that we want to do some things. And Bill mentioned the concept of industries of the future. We're looking for industries of the future that can cross geographic boundaries, i.e., the internet, e-commerce, telecommunications are key issues. And then in the biotech area, it's just not a Portland issue, but it's how do we tie Oregon Health Sciences University with Oregon State and some of the other Oregon University System things to really jumpstart that as a industry cluster that we can help Oregon. Fourth, on the Governor's Small Business Council, I see over the next biennium, this will be the place where I would say the pillars, I'm going to finish up here in 30 seconds, the pillars of small business can really come together. In addition to minority business, we have women-owned businesses, micro businesses, and emerging businesses, I define it, and we need to make sure the system works together, because it's just not programs, it's basically getting people. And I guess with that, I would, you know, basically say, I think, Senator, you asked about return on investment. I think we have about a half-time staff person assigned to this, but I got about 400 volunteers, private sector volunteers working actively on this. If we added up all the man-hours here, I think, to me, this is truly an Oregon initiative, and, you know, I hope it deserves your funding, both in terms of small emerging business line, but also the regional investment line for the next biennium. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. The House members are under call, so we'll excuse them at this time. We'll try to make a happy conclusion. Sorry to have this conclusion on this today. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chairman Hammond and committee members. My name is Sheila Holden. I'm the Northeast Economic Development Alliance Land Use and Transportation Committee Chair. I am also the Pacific Power Portland Customer Business Manager. The passage of SB 5015 will provide the framework and resources needed by Oregon's rural and urban economically lagging areas of the state. These hearings mark a pivotal time in our state's ability to develop communities that can survive and prosper in the next millennium. That development must be driven by locally identified needs using resources and expertise gathered through rural and urban partnerships. We can't survive as a state that is going to be promoting and supporting the development of communities and businesses without the partnership going across the boundaries of urban and rural. Best practices can be shared, and the synergies developed through these collaborations will lead to true community development and local capacity building. Economic development and an improved quality of life requires the recognition of the interdependence of local issues and the use and development of local expertise. For example, the Alvina Community Plan in Northeast Portland is a land use and transportation planning document. But what has set it apart from all previous plans and efforts to revitalize Northeast Portland is that it was born of local recognition and development of a vision for the area driven by local residences and local businesses. It recognizes the interdependence of housing, jobs and employment, education, public safety, historic preservation,
business growth and development, and social and family services. The results have been significant. They include a 500% increase in property values for some of our abandoned homes that were in the area that were leading to public safety problems and lower lifestyles or quality of life in the community. Job training partnerships with businesses that have brought new jobs into the area where we had, instead of just unemployed, we had those discouraged workers who weren't even becoming part of the statistics because they were no longer showing up at the state offices. We also had a major increase in business starts and a more strategic leveraging and attraction of private and public dollars to address the goals set by the community. More has been accomplished in the last 7 years through the momentum and focus of the plan than the previous 25 years before the community initiative to develop the plan. The emphasis here is still on community initiatives. The difference has been local ownership, development, and implementation of strategies, but it would not have been possible without the ability to use the traditional resources in new ways. Committee members, the Alliance supports the Regional Development Fund because it supports what works for communities like Northeast Portland, local initiative, ownership, and champions at the local level to make things happen and to make a difference. It promotes collaboration, creates a forum for leveraging resources and lessons of economic success get shared. Pacific Power has worked with rural and urban communities to do community development. Some of the things that Sam mentioned, like our trip to Eastern Oregon in partnership with Senators Gordley and Ferrioli. We had an opportunity to see some of the needs, the regional needs that were in those communities. And the thing that impressed us was that there is transfer of knowledge and tools that can be used, and that there is the ability to work across the rural-urban divide, if you will. And that we feel that the collaboration and the new focus that we see by OEDD helps, and the Governor's Solutions Teams help support that effort. So again, the Regional Fund is an excellent tool to build our Oregon communities, to help communities develop strategies, identify opportunities that will improve their economic vitality and quality of life in the future. So I urge you to fund it.
Thank you, all three of you. Are there any more, Mr. Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think so. I think we're done for today. I think we're on schedule and finished everything we had scheduled for today. I wanted to provide the, I thought maybe we needed some clarification of what the Commission's proposed investment plan provides for small business development centers. I have a letter to the committee from Chairman Brett Wilcox that I think does that. And I guess what I would like to just summarize is that the $1.8 million is essentially to guarantee that organization, and that's the only guarantee they provide to any organization in the whole Community Development Fund, that it has a base, and that the $1 million set aside for quote-unquote initiatives is available for funding the additional budget requests of the small business development centers as well as other providers that may be there, but the commission wanted to consider that through a competitive process and looking at those initiatives rather than to guarantee it flat out in advance. That's basically the thinking, and I think that's set forth in this letter.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Is there anyone that we missed this morning? If not, we are adjourned until 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.